From Tribune Tower, WGN Radio presents A Conversation.
I want to make one thing perfectly clear.
A dialogue.
What are you prepared to do?
An astute debate.
Everything within the law.
And a peek behind the curtain of politics.
And then what are you prepared to do?
I think Chicago is not only the center of the country, I think it's the center of the world.
Don't tread on them.
Where did this statement come from?
This is the Sunday Spin. Your host is the Chicago Tribune's Rick Pearson.
Good Sunday morning, everyone. I'm Rick Pearson of the Chicago Tribune, and welcome to this week's edition of the Sunday Spin for Sunday, June 5th, 2016, the first Sunday in June. It's time once again for our weekly review of politics, with special attention again this week to Springfield, legislative inaction. Inaction being the key word there. So time to grab that Sunday paper, that cup of coffee, and we'll do the politics for you. Well, it's good to be back from Springfield.
Welcome home.
It's very good to be back, and spent a lot of the Memorial Day weekend covering the scheduled end of the never-ending Illinois spring legislative session. And as I said, that's going to be the dominant subject matter this morning as we start looking at a second year of Illinois government without a budget. And my thanks again to Amanda Vinicky from Illinois Public Radio for co-hosting the show with me last week from the basement of the Illinois State House. And I've also got to thank Sam Panjanovich for sending down some baked goods for a nice taste of home. It was much appreciated to get a good sugar buzz, Sam.
Yeah, that's what I was told. I was told that you had a sugar buzz and that you needed baked goods in the basement.
Yes, baked goods in the basement. That's the new key phrase for this show. But no, I appreciate it. And to answer the questions, no, I did not have a horseshoe. Okay.
We have to also clear this up, too, because some people didn't know what Made Right was last week.
Well, and the thing is, I'm not exactly sure why you wanted me to bring you Made Rights, because you can make Made Rights. It's not like it's hard to, you know, grill loose hamburger and then throw a thing of cheese on top and put it on a bun.
A thing of cheese.
A thing of cheese. A slab of cheese. A hunk of cheese.
And the horseshoe, of course, is the hamburger bun open face.
Or Texas toast.
Or Texas toast with all the meat laid out, then the fries, and then the, I believe it's nacho cheese?
No. Nacho cheese. No.
Oh, yeah.
No. Oh, no. No, that's a cheese sauce. That's not a nacho cheese. That's, you know, a little bit of cheese, a little bit of flour, a little bit of Tabasco sauce, a little bit of beer. It's not nacho cheese sauce. It's not cheese whiz. It is a delicacy. I mean, there are times there's nothing better than a grilled pork loin, you know, pounded out on that Texas toast with the fries, with the cheese sauce on top. That's Springfield eating, I got to tell you.
I can taste it now.
Yes, and you can feel your arteries clogging right now as you talk about it.
Heart attack special.
Now, I was, frankly, I think I lived most of last week on Gabbatoni's Pizza. Because that's
your favorite, Dad.
Well, it is great. It is the best pizza in Springfield, best thin crust, cracker thin crust pizza outside Chicago. It's fantastic. And their kitchen stays open late. So that's frankly why I will tell you, I can't imagine looking at another Gabbatoni's Pizza for about a month right now, just because
that's... Or until the next legislative session.
Yeah, which could be any time.
Which could be any time, right. I guess. Special session, the veto session.
Well, they're in continuous session is what
that's really the case, yeah.
Which is what they have been since May of last year. So.
That's right.
But I was very jealous because was looking at the weather up here on TV, courtesy of watching the Cubs games while I'm in the basement, which actually I have to tell you, and Dave, you've seen it, the press room in Springfield, it is very nice.
It
when
is.
I say the basement, it's hard to describe, but you know, it's got the brickwork and everything, and it is very nice in there. But still, you know, you're cooped up dealing with the General Assembly, and they're on the TV are the Cubs, and the weather looked magnificent, and it was very tough for me to be without a grill.
I did it for you.
You did.
I did it for you.
Yes. And what
Monday afternoon, it's just something very simple to do. I just grilled some chicken, but you're right. I had the afternoon free and was able to, participate in the holiday gathering, saw some friends, and had some chicken on the grill. And it was good.
Now, how'd you do the chicken?
Very simply. I just chicken, the split chicken breasts bone in, and seasoned them and left them covered for maybe a half hour or so on some red hot coals, and worked out real well. I also
barbecue sauce?
Barbecue sauce, just some plain old barbecue sauce, and also had grilled vegetables, some grilled carrots and sweet potatoes.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Wow. What got into you?
I had the time. It was the weather. A couple of weeks ago, I was going to grill out and do some stuff, and it was so windy, I couldn't get the grill lit. It just wouldn't cooperate. But last Monday, everything was just fine.
Well, that sounds good. And thank you for not sending me a picture of that while I was in the basement. I mean, that...
I wouldn't want to needle you about
that. That was, yeah. I'm hoping to do some pork chops today out on the grill. And
good day for it.
Yeah. I mean, a couple of weeks ago when I was down in Peoria for the state Republican convention, my friend Gloria brought me up a 17th Street barbecue care package.
Oh, yes, you mentioned that.
And
that barbecue sauce is great.
Yes. And
definitely lives up to its name.
So I'm very happy to be able to break out the 17th Street barbecue sauce on the pork chops.
Never been hungrier for a Sunday spin.
Really?
Never.
Well, we haven't talked about the blue cheese coleslaw. Have you had that, Sam?
No.
It's the time of year for it now.
Yes.
And you're talking pork chops?
Yeah, but I it needs to kind of sit for a little bit. And so
we have the time. We have the time.
Yeah, and I also found I have to try it, so I'm not going to recommend it yet, but a bacon jalapeno blue cheese potato salad.
Oh, a potato salad.
A potato salad. And I'm normally not big on
next.
The carbs.
That's the next big thing.
That's the next big thing. So we'll give that a try. And if it works, we'll do like we always do and post the recipes that work.
And discard those that don't.
And discard those that don't. But yes, I just hope it stays nice out today. That's after yesterday was kind of a, It did kind of clear out a little bit. And it
rain
was,
off and on.
Yeah.
Yeah, actually, it is supposed to be pretty much like what we're looking at now, Rick. Sunny, high 75. Rain overnight tonight, and mostly sunny day. A slight chance of showers and thunderstorms for tomorrow. So
right.
We're in good shape.
Good. Okay, that's good to hear.
Yes.
Because originally it was the forecast Sunday was kind of iffy, but it's beautiful out here on Michigan Avenue on this bright Sunday morning, and 75, that's a perfect kind of temperature for firing up the grill.
You bet.
I'm all for it.
You bet.
I'm all for it. Well, as always, Dave is here to keep us up on all the news. Sam's here with the latest sports and baked goods. Producer Jasmine is fielding your phone calls at 312-981-7200. You can also text us at that number, 312-981-7200. We're also on Facebook at facebook.com/thesundayspin. Twitter, at Simple Sunday Spin. And engineer Bob is so glad to be able to point his finger at me when I push the wrong button here. As always, you can find all of our shows on WGNRadio.com, our podcast, too, at iTunes. Just search for Rick Pearson. Well, coming up, we've got a great show today. Joining us after Dave's 7:30 news update is State Representative Brandon Phelps, a Democrat from Harrisburg in Southern Illinois. And as always, I like to get a regional perspective on some of the political goings-on, the political impasse in Springfield. After the 8 o'clock news from Dave, my good friend Dave Yepsen, director of the Paul Simon Public Policy Institute at Southern Illinois University at Carbondale, joins the show, and we'll get David's take on what did and didn't happen in Springfield, and we'll also touch on presidential politics. And then after the 8:30 news update, we'll be joined by Illinois Senate Republican leader Christine Redonio of Lamont, and she'll give us the Republican perspective of what lies ahead in Springfield. That's all coming up, but first we're going to take a break. You're listening to The Sunday Spin on WGN. Welcome back to The Sunday Spin. I'm Rick Pearson here in the Allstate Showcase Studio in Tribune Tower on a glorious Sunday morning in downtown Chicago. Well, it's time for our weekly spin through national politics, and of course, there's always Donald Trump. Always. You know, here we had on Friday night the announcement of the death of Muhammad Ali, and Donald Trump tweets out, "Muhammad Ali is dead at 74, a truly great champion and a wonderful guy. He will be missed by all." Then you go back to a Donald Trump tweet from December of last year. This is Donald Trump's tweet. "Obama said in his speech that Muslims are sports heroes. What sport is he talking about? And who? Is Obama profiling?" That's what makes Donald Trump so much fun to cover. You know, you've got these revelations about Trump University, Trump telling Jake Tapper in an interview that's airing today that he believes the federal district judge Gonzalo Curiel, his Hispanic heritage is being used against him in the Trump University case because Trump wants to build a wall. Trump saying it's not racist to hold that view against a federal judge who, as a federal prosecutor, went after Mexican drug cartels. So Donald Trump University and Donald Trump are under fire. And in response, the Trump campaign released a video testimonial of Trump University. In it, it features Kent Moyer, a guy who doesn't sell any real estate. And then it also features a guy named Casey Hoban, a businessman who sells some type of trumped up water. And guess where he sells it? Trump Tower. Here's their testimonial.
"So I was looking for courses that I could learn about the basics of business, such as branding, marketing, finance. In addition, I took some of the real estate courses. I thought maybe the real estate way would be the way for me to go also, to look at investing in real estate. And I must tell you that the courses that I took were outstanding.
I went into the Florida markets and did about 40 business deals there, real estate deals in South Carolina. And the returns on those deals were incalculable. They were just amazing. And I wouldn't have been able to do those deals without learning Donald Trump's business techniques and real estate strategies. And I learned them all from Trump University."
All right. Well, Democrats are enjoying the Trump controversy. They're also enjoying the fact that you have Republicans like Paul Ryan, the House Speaker. You have Mitch McConnell, the Senate Republican leader, both decrying Trump's attacks on Judge Curiel. But Democrats are using a new ad of that puts together what Trump's Republican presidential opponents and Mitt Romney had to say about Trump and Trump University.
"Trump University is so relevant here. And these people owe all of us money now, and they got nothing in return for it.
Defrauded thousands of people with a fake university, took their money, scammed them.
Marco. He's defrauded people out of things, and not just, by the way, on the issue of Trump University.
And I predict that despite his promise to do so, first made over a year ago, that he will never, ever release his tax returns. He has too much to hide.
The ties he sells, the shirts he sells, the suits he sells are manufactured in Mexico and China.
Donald Trump is a phony, a fraud. His promises are as worthless as a degree from Trump University.
He is trying to do to the American voter what he did to the students of Trump University."
So that's the Democrats' new ad using Republican voices. And, you know, when those documents in the Trump University lawsuit were released, we had also Hillary Clinton herself going after the presumptive Republican presidential nominee.
"Trump and his employees took advantage of vulnerable Americans, encouraging them to max out their credit cards, empty their retirement savings, destroy their financial futures, all while making promises they knew were false from the beginning. This is just more evidence that Donald Trump himself is a fraud."
So in response, Trump tweeted out to Hillary Clinton, "Explain to your followers what happened with Whitewater and why your husband was impeached over it." Trump also said after that that when he wins the litigation, he plans to reopen Trump University. Well, Trump also went after Hillary Clinton in an event in San Jose, California. Of course, that's where that big primary is coming up Tuesday. Fighting broke out afterwards against Trump supporters, something that Trump forces think will bring people to their side. But here's what Trump had to say about Hillary Clinton.
Anything Obama wants, she's going forward with, because you know why? She doesn't want to go to jail. That's why, folks. That's why. Remember, Hillary Clinton used to hate Obama. She used to hate him. Bill Clinton hated him. Bill Clinton hated him. He called Bill Clinton a racist. Do you remember that? Bill Clinton hated him. And Hillary Clinton hated Obama. Now it's, yes, sir, Mr. President, sir. Yes, sir. What would you like? I don't believe our country can let her get away with this crime. I don't believe it. So we'll see.
That's Donald Trump in San Jose. Now, Clinton supporters, meanwhile, are hailing a national security / foreign policy address that Hillary Clinton made in San Diego, in which she forcefully went after Trump. Here's Hillary Clinton.
Donald Trump's ideas aren't just different. They are dangerously incoherent. They're not even really ideas, just a series of bizarre rants, personal feuds, and outright lies. He is not just unprepared. He is temperamentally unfit to hold an office that requires knowledge, stability, and immense responsibility. This is not someone who should ever have the nuclear codes, because it's not hard to imagine Donald Trump leading us into a war just because somebody got under his very thin skin.
That's Hillary Clinton. The latest delegate count, by the way, shows that she is just under 60 delegates shy of accepting the presumptive Democratic nomination there. 59 delegates shy, 60 delegates at stake in Puerto Rico today. And then, of course, we have Tuesday's primary, which is a proportional primary. Bernie Sanders saying that he plans to have some of those superdelegates pledge to her. He expects them to reverse themselves, be on his side. And he's saying in California, as he campaigns heavily, he's expecting a contested convention. You're listening to the Sunday Spin on WGN. Up ahead on the Sunday Spin, Brandon Phelps, state representative, a 13-year Democrat from Harrisburg. Representative Phelps will be joining the show from Harrisburg as we get a downstate perspective on what did and didn't happen in Springfield and what lies ahead.
Now back to the Tribune's Rick Pearson. It's the Sunday Spin on 720 WGN.
Good Sunday morning, everyone. Rick Pearson here in the Allstate Showcase studio, and this is your Sunday Spin. Just a couple of more things in the national news spin. Hillary Clinton winning the 7 delegates from the Virgin Islands. Yes, the Virgin Islands are part of the process as well, and she picked up those delegates last night. But as I said, Bernie Sanders is campaigning heavily in California leading up to Tuesday's big primary. Here he is speaking in Palo Alto.
And when we began, you know, all of the experts and the media decided that we were a fringe candidate. Our campaign was not going to go anywhere. Well, a year has come and gone, and here we are. Has been dismissed and written off more times than I can count. And we are still standing. And with your help, we're going to win here in California on June 7th.
That's Bernie Sanders campaigning in California ahead of Tuesday's primary. Well, back here at home, we've got the fact of another continuation of the state stalemate, the stalemate over the issues and agenda being pushed by Republican Governor Bruce Rauner against the Democratic supermajority in the Illinois General Assembly. And joining me now on the phone is State Representative Brandon Phelps, a 13-year Democrat from Harrisburg. Representative, thank you so much for joining me this morning.
Hey, Rick, it's an honor to be on your show. Thanks for thinking of me.
Well, I appreciate having folks on from downstate to kind of, you know, it's part of the diversity of our state is the regionalism, but there's also, you know, the regionalism of politics that gets played. And you are among several Democrats that are now targets of TV ads being run by the House Republican organization, calling you out for your loyalty to Democratic House Speaker Mike Madigan.
Yeah, and Rick, you know, it's unbelievable. I mean, because, you know, 1 minute he's going around the governor saying he wants to compromise. But, Rick, his idea of compromise is when people just agree with him. And we can't have that in this state, especially right now. Not right now. I mean, for instance, I was a big I like Jim Edgar. And a lot of people in my district did. And I know he's the same party as Governor Rauner. And even him, you know, even he said, you know, quit doing the politics, get a budget. That should be your first priority. But it hasn't been because he wants compromise. And the next day he does a $100,000 buy for 5 days to run ads against me. Now, look, yeah, I've been there for a while. I've known Speaker Madigan. Even back, Rick, you knew my uncle back in the 80s and early 90s. They tried to link my uncle with the speaker. It didn't work then. It's not going to work now. These ads are actually helping me, Rick. I've been walking precincts every day. I was going to every event that I possibly can. His approval rating, the governor's approval rating down in Southern Illinois right now is about 17%. So when he's attacking me, it's actually helping me. It's driving more people to my campaign.
Well, I was going to ask you, you know, now that everybody is back home and back in their districts, and, I mean, there is no shortage of frustration. And quite frankly, in some respects, it's probably good that everybody got out of that building and got a break because the tensions were flaring pretty high. But, I mean, what are the voices on the ground back in your district telling you?
Yeah, they're definitely wanting a budget, but they understand that I'm going to do the right thing. Rick, I don't vote for anything until I check with, for example, on education funding. I don't vote for anything until I check with my administrators and my teachers. I do that. You know, I've got groups all over my district that I talk to about any time I take these votes, which are important not only to me, but they're more important to my constituency. And I'm always going to do that. But, Rick, right now I cannot be for the governor's I think he wants to raise the taxes. I've never voted for an income tax increase. I'm not going to vote for one now. I think he wants to raise taxes. I think he even wants to talk about retirement income tax. I'm not going to do that. And at the same time, he knows he doesn't have the votes for the turnaround agenda because I am not going to go against hurting the working men and women of my district. I cannot cave in to going backwards like right to work. I'm just not going to do it. But, Rick, I can be for some of his turnaround agenda. I can be for more of some workman's comp reforms. I can be for a property tax freeze. But I'm not going to sell out my unions, the working men and women that I represent. I'm just not going to do it.
Well, you know, particularly in a district like yours that encompasses a lot of rural areas, and quite frankly, it's like state facilities are almost somewhat the lifeblood of some of those areas downstate. I mean, what is the economy like downstate, and what could be done to improve it?
Well, it's tough because, you know, right now what's going on with the coal industry, we do have a lot of layoffs right now. You know, I'm willing to work. Rick, you've known me. I think I'm one of the most bipartisan legislators that there are. And I pride myself with working with Republicans, independents, Green Party. I can do it all. I want to do that. That's the way I've always been. But it's tough right now. I've always trying to give somebody a chance. You know, you just heard your little deal with Bernie Sanders. I'm not feeling the burn. I'm not really feeling Hillary Clinton either because of the coal industry. I tried to work with Barack Obama on some things, but he kept punching me in the face about the coal industry, and I punched back. My record stands clear on how I feel about the coal. But you're right. State facilities is huge with me, and the governor and I were getting along very well. and I, we were talking about going hunting, and I'm not going to really talk about too much the private conversations that we've had out of respect to him a little bit. But we were ready. We were going to go on some hunting trips and things. And then the very next week, he wants to shut down one of my state facilities, the Hardin County War Camp. And Senator Forbee and I have passed that on, in the legislature to get that reopened. But we hear he's going to veto it. That's going to kill him even more down here in Southern Illinois if he does that.
And what is that economically for your district?
Well, it's the biggest employer of Hardin County. As you know, that's right in the middle of the Shawnee National Forest, which is very beautiful, Rick. Hardin County is not very big at all, and it's one of its biggest employers with around 80, 85 people, and that's huge for that community. And I just hate that we're, you know, what we need, these state facilities, especially we need more correctional facilities like that, Rick. I mean, there's no fence around this correctional facility. These are people that are trying to make a difference in society to get right, and you know, we need more facilities like that. And the governor's asking for $100 million more in corrections budget, Rick. I'm asking just for $1 million of that to open back up the Hardin County War Camp that we need so desperately.
And the word you're getting from the second floor of the State House is no.
Yeah, no. And I just hope he's not playing politics with this, because everybody agrees we need more facilities like this. I mean, I got the vote on the bipartisan COCFA, you know, to keep it open. And then I got it passed in the House with some Republican votes on there. So I hope that he comes to his senses and helps us out, because we need it.
Well, of course, you know, when you talk about the turnaround agenda, his argument is that it's, you know, adopting what he proposes would provide the freedom for these communities to do pro-business changes that would help rural economies.
Yeah, but Rick, I'm not willing. He keeps coming back to right to work and things like that. I've been to some of those discussions. They say it's off the table, but really that's what he wants. He wants to break the unions. I really believe he wants to raise taxes, and I cannot vote for anything that he wants to do in that aspect. I'm just not going
to
do it.
Although, to be fair about taxes, I mean, certainly the budgets that have been passed, actually the budget that was passed for the previous budget year, we didn't pass a budget this year, but the one that came out of the House, both billions of dollars short, even budgets proposed by the governor have been billions of dollars short. I mean, there is a need for new revenue to you can't just make cuts here to balance the budget.
And Rick, you're absolutely 100% correct. You know, we sent that spending plan to him to keep the talks going, to keep the ball rolling. You know, I still believe he had the ability to manage that with line item vetoes. I've always proposed that we look at closing CMS. That's about a $2 billion saving. I'm for closing loopholes. I would be for more gaming, to be honest with you. We can look at sweeping some funds. We can look at some borrowing. I'm ready to talk about all that, but I just can't put another income tax on my constituency. I just can't do it. I know my constituents. They don't want it. I don't want to put it on them. I've never voted for that once, and I do not want to vote for it again. But, Rick, I still think there's time to do this. That night, as you know, you know what's going on in the Capitol. There was going to be a kumbaya meeting with a bunch of bipartisan legislators from the Senate and the House. We were all going to get together, try to do a rank and file deal like we've been doing on these working groups.
Right.
Governor found out about it, and then he had that big press conference in the stairwell with the leader from the House and the leader from the Senate. Well, those talks were gone. So that put us back. That really pushed us back. I thought we were close, and we're a little farther now than we ever been.
We're speaking with State Representative Brandon Phelps, 13-year Democrat from Harrisburg in Southern Illinois. I'm Rick Pearson. This is the Sunday Spin. Welcome back to the Sunday Spin. I'm Rick Pearson here in the Allstate Showcase Studio in Tribune Tower on Michigan Avenue. And joining me on the phone is State Representative Brandon Phelps, a Democrat from Harrisburg, Illinois. And we're getting the Southern Illinois Democratic perspective on what did and didn't happen in Springfield. So, Representative, you know, it was kind of interesting, and you touched on this. You had this press conference held at 5 o'clock on the day of adjournment, 7 hours before the adjournment deadline, as it were. And you have this press conference with Governor Rauner and several Republican state lawmakers, state senators, and they're basically accusing the Democrats of playing politics, and they know that they're passing a phony budget, even though it didn't pass. And then he goes on the following couple of days to campaign around the state, down in your neck of the woods, for example, and basically saying Democrats are playing politics. They don't want a budget. They want a stall game. They're holding hostages. And then calls for compromise. And I'm just curious. I mean, it's hard to see how you get compromise when people are kicking you.
Well, and that's the thing, Rick, you've known me. And a lot of people, I think, I'm not patting myself on the back. A lot of people know they can work with me. I try to be a voice of reason, and I listen to everybody and try to get along with everybody. But his idea of compromise is when people only listen to him. Rick, there's no more Republican Party. It's the Rounder Party. I mean, the money shows it. You just follow the money. That's exactly what a lot of people believe. It's his way or no way, and I just can't be with that. You know, they make fun of us for a 500-page spending plan. Then he comes back the day of adjournment and files one that's almost double the size of that, almost 1,100 pages. So, and then he comes to a state facility in my district, the Vienna Correctional Center, holds more or less a press conference, nothing more than politics. And then the next day he starts running ads against Representative Bradley and I, saying we're puppets of Speaker Madigan. You know, from day one, and like I said, back when my uncle, back in the 80s, they kept saying that about the speaker. It doesn't work. People know who their legislators are. They know that we're going to make the right decisions, and I continue to stand on my record, and I always will.
Well, and there's no doubt you knew that you were going to be a targeted Democrat downstate, more conservative area of the state, and that anytime you vote for something that might look like it's helping Chicago, you're going to be tarred with that.
Always. And it's always been from day one. I there is some give and take you have to do. And I'm going to continue to do the give and take. I mean, I know that we have to give Chicago and the suburbs some things in order downstate to get some things. We understand that, and we try to do the job well. But, you know, I know the governor's asking right now, trying to find out where his tax votes are and trying to weaken the workers' rights. Rick, I can't do that, and I'm not going to do that, and I'll say it first here. But I just can't believe, though, some of the things that his party has not voted on. I mean, you know, if it wasn't for him and these consent decrees, I think we'd already have a budget. But, you know, a lot of people are getting paid. He made the deals with these courts and these groups to get paid. So I just hope he did say the other day, I got to tell him this. He did say the other day about a stopgap budget. I don't think that's necessarily tough to try to get. I think we can do that on a bipartisan measure. I'm willing to listen to that. But my first priority right now, Rick, is to make sure my schools get open in August and those kids go back to school first and foremost. That's exactly what I want.
Well, and that's the next thing I wanted to ask, because certainly it seems to me that the schools are basically now the pressure point, because last year when the Democratic budget was sent to the governor, he vetoed all of it except for the portion that dealt with grade in high schools, and that took a big pressure point off. Now we don't have a budget at all sitting on his desk. And the very real fear about the fate of schools opening. And, of course, we have the issues up here in Chicago about the billion-dollar deficit it faces. There are various competing spending plans that were passed by the Senate and the House, but none of them ultimately sent to the governor that would provide up to $450 million to the Chicago public schools. All that talk still about trying to change the school aid formula, talk about making sure if we put more money into schools under the current formula that no school district loses any money, the governor wanting a standalone plan. I have to wonder, is the risk so great about if schools don't open? And of course, each side believes the other side is to blame for all of this. But is the risk so great that we are going to have just a single clean, as it were, education funding bill?
I can see that. I definitely can see that, Rick. I mean, that's one of the reasons why I voted for that spending plan. I talked to my superintendents. I talked to my teachers' organizations. And, you know, they said, Brandon, we need you to vote for something to get it to the governor's desk. And actually, that spending plan, Rick, was the most money that my schools have seen in the history of Illinois. And I can see, and I can't speak for my colleagues, but I talked to a lot of Republicans, talked to a lot of Democrats. I know the number one priority right now is to get a K-12 budget. And I think a lot of my colleagues would vote on something to make sure, because the governor does not want schools not to open on his watch.
But does Speaker Madigan want the schools not to open under his watch?
I think he does. We talked to him. He understands the important how important this is going to be for our schools. And I know he's starting to listen to the rank and file members a little more because we're going to him in some of these talks. And he understands how critical that issue is, no doubt about it.
Well, and I think, too, when you look at the issue of schools not opening in Chicago, which is something that Forrest Claypool, the head of the Chicago Public Schools, said that schools won't open if there is not a state appropriation. You know, you look at the gun violence that we have in this city, and then you have the talk about the prospect of the Chicago Public Schools not opening. I mean, that just boggles the mind.
Well, and I don't understand it like you, of course, but you know, by listening, I do understand a little bit more when the Chicago legislators talk to me about that, and I get it. And I think, therefore, like I said, Rick, I think there's going to be a big push by every legislator in the General Assembly, the House and the Senate, to make sure that we put pressure on our leaders, not just the Democrat leaders, but also the Republican leaders, to get something done. And I really think you'll see something done, hopefully, by the middle of July. I really do.
But do you think it's going to be of the magnitude, of the dollar magnitude of what you passed or even what the Senate tried to do with a $900 million in new funding?
I don't know how we can, Rick, like you said earlier, until we have that revenue discussion. I just think you'll see a stopgap, and my superintendents are going crazy even if we do a six-month budget for K through 12 because how do you plan for the whole year? And so, I mean, I hope the discussions are still going. Rick, you said earlier about, you know, need a little break. I do agree. There are a lot of people that did want the break. You know me. I'm ready to be there right now. We know I wish we'd stay until they lock the doors, and I know a lot of people say that. And you had people bringing their sleeping bags in. I don't buy all that. But we need to be there more. And I'm going to ask the Speaker to see if we can't be there more. But if the governor really wants us there, you know he's got more constitutional power to put us back and then, you know, bring us back than anybody. I mean, heck, Rick, he can even dispatch the state police to come and get us. So I'm ready for that. I'm ready for that, and I'll be there every day that the session's there.
You touched on the stopgap issue, and I thought that was kind of interesting because here we were the Friday before the deadline of Tuesday, but on that Friday you had a leaders meeting with the governor, and Senate President John Cullerton had touched on the idea of, well, what about a stopgap budget, short-term budget, to tide us over? The working groups are meeting. They're making some progress, but in Cullerton's view, there was no way those working groups could wrap up their work on these big issues by Tuesday. And the administration completely threw cold water on that idea and basically accused the Democrats of walking away from the table in these working groups. And then you flash forward to Tuesday, the adjournment deadline day, and it's the Rauner administration that's proposing a stopgap budget. I mean, that to me kind of just shows the tensions that exist between the legislative chamber and the governor.
Rick, no one trusts each other. That's the bottom line. No one trusts each other. I mean, it's all political. It's all political. Case in point, just by the ads they're running against, you know, the five whatever targeted, whatever you want to call us, Democrats. I mean, they're running $100,000 for 5 days on each one of my networks and three, you know, with ABC, CBS, and NBC. But I don't know how you find compromise that. I don't know why you want to lead the way he wants to do that. To me, that's no way to lead. You're the governor. You want to bring people together, and we don't have that in this governor, Rick.
We got a text from a listener who wanted to know about you mentioned about saving money by eliminating CMS, and we neglected to say what CMS is, Central Management Services. But what that's basically the bureaucratic agency that runs the bureaucracy. If that makes any sense.
Rick, I had the bill to do it a couple of years ago. I had the bill to shut it down because I listened to a lot of my state workers, not only from my district, from a lot of different places around the state. And they said, for example, the Department of Natural Resources, when you buy a new lawnmower, that department has to buy it from CMS, and then CMS has to buy it from the dealer. Why can't we have the departments to do that, save that extra layer of money, get rid of that extra layer of bureaucracy? I don't think we need it. That's something we need to look at. I've even told the governor that. Let's look at shutting that down. I think let the departments do their duties and get rid of CMS. That's a savings of almost $2 billion, with a B, $2 billion, Rick, and I want to continue to look at that.
Actually, I believe that was part of his original campaign platform, was to get, I don't know about eliminating it, but of basically generating a bunch of savings by eliminating a lot of its duties.
I don't know why you want to have that extra layer of bureaucracy, Rick. Everybody wants to talk about smaller government, less government. There you go right there. And like I said, I had the bill a couple of years ago. I'm not saying advocating to cut people's job. You can put some of those CMS employees in the other departments, but you're still going to save a lot of money. We got to look more at that. I'm going to look more at those kind of things than I am for an income tax increase, Rick, because I'm not ready and willing to do any type of income tax or retirement income tax. Rick, I'm a retirement community. I have a lot of people from your listening area that actually has moved to Southern Illinois because they can't believe how beautiful it is. So I'm willing to have those discussions. Rick, you know me. I'm level-headed. I work with anybody.
That's State Representative Brandon Phelps, a Democrat from Harrisburg. Representative, thank you so much for giving us the downstate Democratic perspective.
Hey, it really was truly an honor to be with you, Rick, and thanks for thinking of me again.
We're going to take a quick break. You're listening to the Sunday Spin on WGN. Up ahead on the Sunday Spin, Dave Yepsen, director of the Paul Simon Public Policy Institute at Southern Illinois University at Carbondale.
This is the Sunday Spin on 720 WGN. Once again, here's Rick Pearson of the Chicago Tribune.
Good Sunday morning, and welcome to the second hour of your Sunday Spin for today, June 5th. The first Sunday in June. Always Donald Trump in the news. And, of course, last week, we shouldn't forget Trump's press conference where under fire about money being donated to veterans, as he had promised when he skipped a debate back in Iowa. Trump went after those doing the questioning, the media.
Yeah, I think you've set a new bar today for being contentious with the press corps, kind of calling us losers to our faces and all that.
No, not all of you, just many of you.
All right, fine. Enough of us. Is this what
not you did?
Is this what it's going to be like covering you if you're president?
Yeah, it is.
We're going to have this kind of confrontation in the press room?
Okay, yeah, it is going to be like this, David. If the press writes false stories like they did with this, because, you know, half of you are amazed that I raised all of this money. If the press writes false stories like they did where I wanted to keep a low profile, I didn't want the credit for raising all this money for the vets. I wasn't looking for the credit. And by the way, more money is coming in. I wasn't looking for the credit. But I had no choice but to do this because the press was saying I didn't raise any money for them. Not only did I raise it, much of it was given a long time ago. And there is a vetting process, and I think you understand that. But when I raise almost $6 million, and probably in the end we'll raise more than six because more is going to come in and is coming in. But when I raise $5.6 million as of today, more is coming in. And and this is going to phenomenal groups, and I have many of these people vetting the people that are getting the money and working hard. And then we have to read probably libelous stories, or certainly close, in the newspapers. And the people know the stories are false. I'm going to continue to attack the press. Look, I find the press to be extremely dishonest. I find the political press to be unbelievably dishonest.
So that's Donald Trump. And as he unveiled this funding list, the AP found out that most of the money was dispersed the same day that a Washington Post reporter was asking the Trump campaign, where did the money go? Then, as Trump talked about the time it takes to vet these various groups, he apparently missed a group that's in trouble for fundraising solicitations not going to charity. So there you have it. Well, joining me now on the phone is David Yepsen, director of the Paul Simon Public Policy Institute at Southern Illinois University at Carbondale, a good friend of the show. David, thanks for joining me this morning.
It's good to be with you, Rick.
So as a member of the unbelievably dishonest political news media that you once were, I have to wonder, though, and we had Brandon Phelps on just prior to you, and here you have a conservative downstate Democrat who's being targeted for defeat by the House Republicans, by Governor Rauner. But I got to think there is a Trump factor that could play in downstate.
Well, I certainly think that's true, and that's one of the wild cards in this campaign. Donald Trump is an unconventional candidate. it's always been popular to beat up on the media, Rick. I mean, you and I have heard this before.
Not quite in this. Not quite with this vehemence, you know.
Right. You have to go back to George Wallace's campaigns to see where this kind of vehemence is. And I don't know, even though we're a popular target, I don't know that it nets him that much with voters. Okay, we hate the press too, Mr. Trump, but what are you going to do for us? How does this solve some problem? And Donald Trump is discovering that, you know, a lot of media people, including me, didn't think he was really going to be a serious contender, didn't treat him as a serious contender. He was sort of a celebrity candidate. And as he started to do well, the scrutiny changes. Now that he's the presumptive Republican nominee for president, that media scrutiny is just going to get white hot. And everything he does is going to be under a lens. If you say you're going to raise money for veterans, okay, how much did you raise? Who got it? There's going to be a lot of, you know, if you have a Trump university that's offering a degree program and it's in court, the press is going to want to know, well, how did it work? What did you charge? I think the scrutiny is going to get quite hot on him, and you know he doesn't like it, and he lashes out. So we're going to see more of this.
But every time that you know he, and the contradictions are fast and furious with Donald Trump, saying one thing, doing another, you know, and but every time he gets four Pinocchios for not being truthful, it doesn't seem to have hurt him at all.
No, it doesn't. Although I wonder if there isn't some ceiling here or some threshold. It's one thing to capture a Republican nomination. It's another thing to win an election in November. And one of the things, Rick, that is hard to, I think, ascertain in this campaign is voters like what Trump says, many of them, but, you know, will they vote? There's an interesting discussion going on about public opinion polling. If you have telephone polls, and they have lots of limitations these days, you know, Trump doesn't do as well against Hillary Clinton as he does in some of these online polls.
Mm-hmm.
And so one question that that I certainly have as an observer of this process is, are people in the anonymity of an online poll willing to say they're for Donald Trump, but are unwilling to tell a pollster over the phone that they're for Donald Trump. And we saw that with Tom Bradley, an African-American mayor of Los Angeles, where voters said, oh, yeah, we're for Tom Bradley. And then when they got in the voting booth, they did not vote for him. So, you know, I'm wondering if Trump hasn't tapped into something here. And in fact, there is an undercurrent of support for him. Certainly see a lot of support for him down here in Southern Illinois, as you noted. And legislators and politicians like Representative Phelps certainly have to respond to that.
Well, and I also wonder, too, in a broader sense, too, about you know, picking up on Springfield and that kind of thing, about maybe this anti-incumbency mood that might be out there, and indeed, you know, anti-establishment, anti-incumbency, and when you look at Hillary Clinton, for example, that almost represents an incumbency in some respects.
That's right, and this is another thing that's unprecedented about this campaign, is that both Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump have unfavorables much higher than their favorables. So a lot of voters are really confronted with a dilemma here. Who am I for? That's why you're seeing the interest recently in the Libertarian candidates. We've never been in these waters before, Rick. And I think, it's an anti-incumbent mood. But, you know, people have always been kind of down on incumbents. They've been angry at Springfield for a long time. People are mad at the mayor in Chicago. But what's the alternative? What's the alternative? The old saying, you know, you can't beat somebody with nobody, I think is true. And so while people may be mad at Springfield, but they like their local legislator. And I think that makes it just complicates this whole political process that's going on in Springfield, where the politicians are incredibly nervous and you know this from watching it, they see what's going on with Trump and all this anger and hatred, and they're spooked. And so, you know, they don't want to cut spending. They don't want to raise taxes. And we've been in a deadlock in this state for almost a year.
We're speaking with David Yepsen, the director of the Paul Simon Public Policy Institute at SIU Carbondale. I'm Rick Pearson. This is the Sunday Spin. Welcome back to the Sunday Spin. I'm Rick Pearson, 8:19 on this Sunday morning. I'm speaking with David Yepsen, the director of the Paul Simon Public Policy Institute at Southern Illinois University at Carbondale. David, just a couple of calls and texts that we got. They want to know, why doesn't the press get hot against Hillary and the Clinton Foundation funders? Why doesn't the press ask more questions about Benghazi? And, I mean, the questions have been asked. The answers are what they are. The investigations continue. The email server. This kind of goes to the heart of Hillary Clinton being such a polarizing figure.
Well, that's right. Certainly, Hillary Clinton's campaign does not feel like the press has underplayed Benghazi or emails.
Anything critical about Hillary Clinton, they never believe, you know, the press has been treating them right.
That's correct. And that's, that's politics. That's understandable. Politicians love it when their opponent is getting gored in the media and hate it when the target comes on them. So, you know, you hear that from conservatives. Why aren't you doing more about Benghazi? Well, you look at the Fox News coverage of Benghazi, you know, the New York Times coverage of the emails. I certainly think the Clinton people feel like there's something there. And remember, too, at some point a story is reported. There's no more news here. Is there anything, any new developments? And certainly of the email controversy, the State Department issued a report that was pretty critical of Hillary Clinton. I think that did get pretty good media attention. But doing 5 and 6 and 7 stories about that, at some point a reporter said, there's nothing new here. I got to move on to something else.
We've got a call from Ron. Ron, welcome to the Sunday Spin.
Good morning, Rick. I wanted to ask you, and usually when I think of vice president candidates, I think of baseball managers, that they probably can win you a lot of games, but they can lose it. But I think with this election, with both of these candidates being pretty unpopular and having problems within the party and their base, will they choose someone that appeals more to their base, to solidify the base? Or, as we know, usually in the general election, you have to try to go out to those independents or more in the middle as far as the vice president candidate. So that's my comment as far as the candidate choosing of the vice president candidate. Thanks, guys.
Thank you, Ron. And that is an interesting question. I mean, particularly among Democrats, where the fact we've got, you know, Bernie Sanders vowing that there will be a contested convention, even though it's pretty apparent that Hillary Clinton looks like she'll have the delegates to wrap up the nomination by Tuesday. But, you know, does a Hillary Clinton reach out and try to go left?
Absolutely. I mean, Ron's question is right where this race is right now. First of all, the candidates have to decide what sort of game they're going to play in the vice presidential pick. Are they going to go for a geographic candidate? Do they go to somebody that could balance them geographically? John Kennedy picking Lyndon Johnson in 1960. Today, that's not as important as perhaps a demographic choice. Bill Clinton picking Al Gore, not because he had two Southerners, not because he was playing a geographic game, but because he wanted to send a message about a generational change in Washington. So Hillary Clinton, for example, now you hear a lot of talk about Elizabeth Warren. And I certainly think both candidates are weighing the pluses and minuses of who they pick. And, for example, Barack Obama picked Joe Biden in part because he wanted to strengthen his credentials as a in his expertise on foreign policy questions. The young senator, Biden, with old gray hair politician, you know, adds some gravitas to the ticket. So both Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump are weighing these kind of questions now. Ron's right about one thing.
you know, if they get the vice presidential choice right, it's no big deal. If they get it wrong, it can really bog them down. If George McGovern and Thomas Eagleton, for example. But George Herbert Walker Bush had a real controversy in picking Dan Quayle. It was a big flap at the opening of the fall campaign. But at the end of the day, the vote cast is the vote for president, and George Herbert Walker Bush still defeated Mike Dukakis in '88. So important story now, not the whole ballgame, though.
No, and of course, you know, a lot of focus as far as Donald Trump has been Newt Gingrich, and that would be somebody that would provide that kind of governmental link.
Yes, and Newt Gingrich would be a fantastic attack dog. I mean, you expect your vice presidential candidate to be out there lashing the opposition and going on the attack. Trump does a pretty good job of that himself.
And so does Hillary Clinton, for that matter.
That's right. She had a wonderful, very effective speech attacking Trump last week, as you mentioned. And the Democrats are clamoring for more of that sort of thing. But Gingrich would be a good balancing to Trump, issue-oriented, knowledgeable, and that's certainly an option for him.
Well, and one thing to note is that Gingrich also has been among these Republicans who've been very critical over Trump's comments about the federal judge and the Trump University suit as well. It's kind of interesting, I think, when you see, you know, Paul Ryan, who, you know, finally offered his lukewarm endorsement of Donald Trump. But Paul Ryan says, you know, Trump's not going to take over this party. Mitch McConnell says that, and the Senate Republican leader. But the nominee does become the de facto head of the party, doesn't he?
That's right. And Donald Trump really needs to do something he's never done in his lifetime, and that's listen to other people. He's been a huge success following his own instincts and his own path. But people like Newt Gingrich, Paul Ryan, Mitch McConnell, they've been at this game for a long time, and he needs to have somebody who tells him, you know, you really can't take on a judge because of his ethnic heritage. The charge didn't hold water. It's just backfired. Look, we need to try to do what we can to appeal to Latino voters. 80% of them dislike it, Donald. Back off. Don't say that. And that's going to be very hard, I think, for Donald Trump to do. It's just not in his persona.
Well, let's, in just the couple of minutes we have left with you, David, let's go turn back to Springfield and the fact that, here, if you think things couldn't get worse, it looks like it is, because actually you even have some infighting among the Senate and House Democrats over what an ultimate budget should be.
I know. And, you know, you've heard me say it's always darkest before the dawn in politics. And I thought for a year that perhaps eventually they would work something out, compromise would occur. But that doesn't seem to have happened. And now that you're facing the specter of K-12 schools not opening, it's sad, Rick. I see a lot of it in students who are not coming back to school because they can't get their assistance grants. And then the state has just reached a perfect storm with the fiasco in the budget, the problems of leadership in Chicago, the situation with gun violence. And you would think that at some point the political leadership would come together and say, we have to start doing things differently. And you're closer to it than I am, Rick, but I certainly would hope that as this train wreck with the K-12 schools approach, that you'll see some people reaching some compromises.
That would be a hopeful sign, that's for sure. David Yepsen, director of the Paul Simon Public Policy Institute at Southern Illinois University at Carbondale. David, thanks so much for getting up with me this morning.
Thank you, Rick.
We'll be back with more right after this. Well, coming up ahead here on the Sunday Spin, I'll have Christine Redonio, the Republican leader from the Illinois Senate, a Republican from Lamont, will be joining the show, and she'll give us the Republican perspective of the post-impasse or post-deadline in the future of the impasse. Can we get a short-term budget in this state?
Now back to the Tribune's Rick Pearson. It's the Sunday Spin on 720 WGN.
Welcome back to the Sunday Spin. I'm Rick Pearson here in the Allstate Showcase Studio on Michigan Avenue on this beautiful, beautiful Sunday morning. Last week, President Obama was in neighboring Indiana holding a PBS town hall in Elkhart. And in that town hall, PBS NewsHour host Gwen Ifill asked the president about the Donald Trump phenomena.
Why don't you mention Donald Trump by name?
You know, he seems to do a good job mentioning his own name. So I figure, you know, I'll let him do his advertising for him.
Do you consider at all that any of the support for him is backlash against you personally?
Well, here's one thing I would say, and I just spoke about this at the local high school. I think Trump is a more colorful character than some of the other Republican elected officials. But a lot of the story that he's telling is entirely consistent with what folks have been saying about me or the general story they've been telling about the economy for the last 7.5, the last 10, the last 20, the last 30 years. And you can actually describe the story fairly concisely, right? The basic story they tell is that the problems that the middle class, working families are experiencing has to do with a big bloated government that taxes the heck out of people and then gives that money to undeserving folks, welfare cheats, or you know, the 47% who are takers, or you know, whatever phrase they use.
That's President Obama speaking on the Donald Trump phenomena to PBS NewsHour host Gwen Ifill. We also got a text, too, about the Trump in the Donald Trump University lawsuit case. And the text says, come on, Rick, that Hispanic judge is a Clinton nominee. Biased much? Actually, Donald Trump's sister is a federal appellate court judge, was appointed to the appellate court by Bill Clinton after being nominated to the U.S. District Court by Ronald Reagan. So that's Donald Trump's sister. But this judge, to be fair, was nominated by Barack Obama after serving 19 years as a federal U.S. attorney. So there's a little bit of the fact-checking going on here, courtesy of the Sunday Spin. Well, joining me now on the phone is Illinois Senate Republican leader and senator from Lamont, Christine Redonio. Leader, thank you so much for joining me this morning.
Well, thank you for having me.
We've been talking, obviously, about the issue of what didn't come out of Springfield last week, and, of course, the issue of how we can move forward here. And I do get the sense, and this is something I talked to Brandon Phelps, Representative Phelps, about, of the idea that the weight of not having schools open for many school districts in the fall, I don't know that any side wants to take any blame for that.
Well, I would agree with you. I think that the wrath of the voters would be even greater than it already is if that were to happen. So I think there's a lot of motivation to make sure that the schools do open.
But when you look at, you know, for example, the bill that came out of the Senate on Senate Democratic votes, a $900 million increase for elementary and secondary education, you know, here again, where's the money come from?
Well, exactly. And, you know, even to the most ardent supporters of education, and I certainly would count myself among them, you've got to have some reality in there. I mean, $900 million more dollars, no matter how much you support education, is pie in the sky when you're talking about not funding other basic human services, not being able to keep the lights on in the prison. Certainly a more modest increase in education funding, which the governor actually has proposed, makes a lot more sense.
I mean, it just, but also, how do you do this in a vacuum? I mean, and this is one of the things I've been wondering about with the concept of the working groups. You know, we've had various working groups looking at various items that are part of the governor's turnaround agenda. We have a budget working group, ostensibly. And I don't, to me, I just question how this can be done in isolation because every vote is kind of a trade-off. You know, every issue is, well, I could go with you here, but I can't go with you there, for each individual lawmaker. And it just, it seems to be very complicated to put that all together in one big piece.
Well, it is, and that's something we typically do with the budget, is put all the pieces together, and that really illustrates the priorities of the state when you have that final budget that actually funds various items. Now, having said that, it's always complicated. We always have a lot of balls in the air. This year is no exception, but it is possible, as we did last year, to isolate education funding to fund that for the entire year so that school districts, parents, students especially, can continue with their learning without interruption and can have some stability and expectation that their schools will open. We did it last year. We can do it again this year.
But at what funding level? Is there a compromise level, perhaps, that can be found?
Well, yeah, there's a lot of room between what the governor's proposed and $900 million.
Yes, that's so, why I asked the question.
Yeah. So we haven't gotten back together to talk about what that level might be. But given the state of affairs right now, number one, I think school districts would be thrilled to have full funding of the foundation level. That's something they have not had in 20 years. So they would be thrilled to death to have that. And the knowledge that it will come, I think right now they don't really think it's realistic either that they're going to get an extra $900 million. So I think closer to the governor's level makes much more sense.
But how difficult is it, too, when you have the fact of, you know, obviously Chicago lawmakers, Chicago Democrats are going to be pushing for as much as they can to help the Chicago public schools, and you open that up, that issue up, and of course, you know what we've seen as far as a $1 billion school deficit. Barbara Bird Bennett doesn't help things. I mean, there will have to be some kind of accommodation for Chicago public schools, won't there?
Well, there may be, but I'll tell you, I think the people in the state, even a lot of folks in Chicago, realize the Chicago public schools have been grossly mismanaged for decades, and that has been 100% on the Democratic machine that runs both Chicago and the state. So people realize that, and while they may be willing to make some accommodation, there is no way that there's going to be a huge bailout for Chicago. I mean, they have just got to restructure, take responsibility for the problems that they've had, and they need to increase their local taxes. You know, Chicago's not had a referendum in over 80 years on schools. I don't know where else in the state we have that situation. So one of the items of discussion would allow Chicago to, again, increase their property taxes to pay for their schools the way that the rest of the state has.
But third rail of property taxes, right? I mean,
but it's Chicago, and quite frankly, they, although they feel that they're taxed heavily, the property tax on residential property in the city is very, very low. It's much lower than it is either in suburban Cook County or in the rest of the state. They are disproportionately low, and, you know, the rest of the state sees that. Now, Chicagoans may not see it, but it is the fact.
We're speaking with Christine Redonio, the Illinois Senate Republican leader from Lamont. I'm Rick Pearson. This is the Sunday Spin.
It's
8:49 on this Sunday morning. I'm Rick Pearson, and this is the Sunday Spin. And we're speaking with Christine Redonio, the Republican leader of the Illinois Senate. She's a state senator from Lamont. Senator, I'm curious if there is that desire about at least achieving a budget for education, where does that leave us as far as the last proposal for this, even the short-term stopgap, get us past the election type budget?
Well, that's the second item that absolutely has to be done before the election. You know, the Democrats have made it crystal clear that they are unwilling do any kind of major reform or long-term budget until after the election. That's the priority for them. So having said that, the governor has no choice but to say, okay, how do we keep the lights on? I mean, we are literally having a difficult time feeding the prisoners that we have, feeding the residents in our mental health institutions. So there's a lot of need for just the money for day-to-day operations. The governor has said, look, I'll set aside a long-term budget. I'll set aside the reforms. But we have to have what we're calling a stopgap budget, one that funds everything critical at minimal levels, and secondly, a school funding package. Those two items need to be addressed.
And where do you think that goes? I mean, is that something you think is achievable?
I do think it's achievable. What the Democrats don't want to do is to pass any reforms before the election. They don't want any votes on revenue or a tax increase before the election. So they want to put all that off. And the governor has said, if there is going to be any sort of tax increase whatsoever, it will not happen without reforms. And I totally agree with him. To do otherwise, to just raise taxes and continue the way we've done business in the state for one day longer would just be the wrong decision. So we're putting that discussion off until after November. So within the confines of the revenue that we have available, we need to do some basic funding of state services. And I think everyone does agree with that. At least I know the Senate president does, Leader Durkin does, the governor does, and I would agree with that as well.
You left out somebody there.
Well, I did, and only because I read a comment that he made that he did not want to address anything other than the fiscal year 16, which ends July 1st. That's just 3 weeks from now. We need more than that. We cannot string the state along with uncertainty all through the fall. That's just not fair.
We're talking about Speaker Madigan is the name that you left off the list. And I mean, I do think on both sides, and even Brandon Phelps mentioned this, is there's just a complete lack of trust and a question of sincerity here.
By rank and file, I'm not sure who he was referring to.
Well, just from each side. There's no trust between Democrats or Republicans or the administration. I mean, I refer to it as a question of sincerity. How sincere are the various parties willing to work to try to reach an agreement?
Well, again, there's one individual I would leave out for sure, and that would be the Speaker. The Senate President talks a good game about wanting to get this stuff done, but until the end of session, he pretty well fell in line with the Speaker. So I'm hoping that the fact he would not pass the Speaker's $7 billion out-of-balance budget was a good sign that he understands the need to do some resetting here.
One of the other questions I have, though, is that as amid this effort to try to reach compromise, when the governor goes out on the stump right after the scheduled end of session, and it becomes the ads being run against targeted Democrats. He's criticizing Democrats for being too loyal to their leaders. How does that help forge compromise?
Well, I view it as sort of a separate track entirely. I mean, let's face it, politics in this state is rough and tumble. It always has been. And there's the political side of things, the public statements, the public theater, and that always goes on. But on a separate track is the policy track, and that has always gone on as well. And you cannot use the public political theater as an excuse not to come to the table. That's just nonsense. If you're that sensitive and thin-skinned, then you ought not be in this business.
One thing I was curious about, too, is the fact, you know, given how tensions were very high in the State House on that Tuesday night, just weather, having a break wasn't a bad idea for everybody to get away from each other for a little bit.
Oh, I think it was. I mean, yeah, people have been away from home all of May. There's a lot of rhetoric, a lot of effort trying to pull things together, a lot of disappointment and frustration. So I think in some ways it is good for people to get away, to regroup, to go home and listen to their constituents. Interestingly, I had a kids' fair yesterday along with Representative Durkin and Sandbeck, and I was fascinated by the comments that people came up to me and said, keep up the good fight, you know, keep working at it. We can't keep going the same as we have. So it sort of gives me a renewed sense of purpose in getting down there and getting these problems taken care of.
A renewed resolve.
Exactly.
And so do you know what the status is? When do we when are we going to see the budgeteers, as it might be? Or when are they going to get together and start working on that aspect?
Well, that piece of it continues to go along. I mean, they will be meeting next week. The House has announced a schedule. The Senate has not yet announced one. But again, that separate track of trying to resolve the problems continues.
That's State Senator Christine Redonio, the Republican leader of the Illinois Senate from Lamont. Leader Redonio, thank you so much for joining me this morning.
Oh, thank you for having me.
We'll be back with more right after this. That's all we have time for this week's edition of the Sunday Spin. I want to thank my guests, State Representative Brandon Phelps, Senate Republican Leader Christine Redonio, and David Yepsen, the director of the Paul Simon Institute at SIU Carbondale. And most of all, I want to thank all of you for listening. And one quick plug, we have this feature that we've been doing at the Chicago Tribune. It's a morning kind of email newsletter called the Morning Spin. So I'd encourage you all to go to chicagotribune.com, and you can sign up to get that delivered to your email box every day.
Is that the trunk?
Trunk.
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 Trunk. Please. You pronounce it correctly.
Oh, because it just rolls right off the tongue.
Well, actually,
the trunk.
People have been using the term and think it's people are saying Trump, you know, the way it sounds.
I didn't even think of that.
I mean, so... I'm not going to go there.
Do you have to get new business cards now?
I'm actually curious if we're going to get like new email addresses and things like that.
Right.
So
it's a big deal.
It's,
so is this going to be the? Maybe you're not the correct person to be.
I'm not the correct person to ask any of these questions. I'm merely just a.
But is this going to be the name of the newspaper now?
No. No, no. The newspapers,
still going to be the Tribune.
It's always going to be the Chicago Tribune, okay. The LA Times. All of the.
But Trunk is the name of the company.
That's the corporate entity.
The corporate entity, which is separate from the broadcast side.
Right. That's the Tribune Media is the broadcast side.
Right.
And Tribune Publishing Trunk. Was the newspaper Trunk. Side, and that is now Trunk.
Trunk.
Yes, with a lowercase T.
Right, with lowercase and a font that looks like it should be on the Mary Tyler Moore Show from 1972. Okay.
I just write. Okay?
I know you
That's
do.
All I do. Ask me about politics, but not the corporate kind.
How was
okay?
Springfield?
It's so good to be home. Truly, it is. And nice to get some laundry done, that's for sure.
Well, I'm sure everyone around here
appreciate
that
yes.
Also.
Yes.
There must be something fun when you're down there. I know you're busy working 20 hours a day, but is there something fun that you do when you're in Springfield?
Go to sleep. I actually, you know, and I lived there for like 10 years, so I do have an affection for the place.
Right.
And
sounds like it.
Well, I mean, it's...
Trunk.
Well, the best part was when the legislature would leave, and then, I could
relax.
Go play golf.
Oh,
you know, okay. Actually had a colleague of mine that would expense his golf to his newspaper and call it field research.
Oh,
I thought that was very
literal.
Clever.
Literal
yes,
field
yes,
research.
Yes, indeed.
Nice. When I'm in Springfield, and I haven't been there often, half a dozen times.
That's a lot.
Well, yeah, I've
Why
gone
would
for
you?
Conventions
oh, okay.
and you know, things like that. I always go to the Steak and Shake there.
Well, there is that. There's the Coney Dog. The Coney Dogs were founded there.
Oh.
Cozy Dog. You've got, I mentioned my pizza place, Gabatoni's Pizza. Somebody else said, I got to try Incredible Edibles on 7th Street by the state police.
Now we're talking.
You know, a great bakery there. So
We're talking.
And truly, it has become a much better food town now than it was back when I was there in the 80s. I mean,
you're not saying it out loud, but I can see in your eyes you can't wait to get back.
What?
Rick, have a trunkalicious day.
Thank you, Dean. Have a great show.